You're listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, visit nakedbiblepodcast.com and click on the support link in the upper right-hand corner. If you're new to the podcast and Dr. Heiser's approach to the Bible, click on New Start Here at nakedbiblepodcast.com.
Welcome to the Naked Bible Podcast, episode 299, ETS-SBL Conferences. I'm the layman, Trey Strickland, and he's the scholar, Dr. Michael Heiser. Hey, Mike. How's the conferences going?
No, pretty good. You know, I've been to a bunch of papers, more than usual. And I think, you know, I'd say like 80, 85% of them have been pretty good, you know, pretty interesting. A couple that I, you know, that weren't really what I thought they would be, but that's okay. That's kind of normal too.
Anything that stands out?
Yeah, I had sort of an interesting, on the first day, I had kind of an interesting experience. I went to a paper. People may or may not know or may not recall that during this week, there are a whole bunch of societies that meet concurrently. So like the big one is the Evangelical Theological Society, and then that ends on Friday, and then there's something called IBR, which meets Friday and Saturday, and then the first day, full day of Saturday, is SBL, Society of Biblical Literature, and they meet with the American Academy of Religion. Those are the big ones, and the American Schools of Oriental Research. That's the archaeology crowd. So those are the big ones, but they're like dozens of smaller societies, and one of these is the Evangelical Philosophical Society, and so you get philosophers in there. People who do philosophical theology and occasionally apologetics. So on the first day I went to a paper, here's the title, The Apologetic Value of Christian Demonology. So I didn't know what to expect here because I knew the speaker would be a philosopher and not a biblical scholar. And I also didn't know if by demonology he would mean sort of just traditional Christian stuff about demons, again, as opposed to biblical theology, you know, biblical material in its own ancient context, you know, like we do and on the podcast and like I focus on an unseen realm. And on the one hand, the paper was a bit disappointing because it was mostly Christian tradition. The presenter didn't really have a good grasp of the biblical material or the wider context for the biblical material. But it was really nice to see somebody who is just a philosopher trying to make the argument that, you know, the belief in a spiritual world is really important for apologetics. So it was kind of interesting. And, you know, so that was kind of an uneven paper for me. And in the Q&A, you know, I asked the guy a question about, you know, some of the content of his paper, you know, what did he think was sort of the weakest element and where might he be wrong? Because what his paper was based on was actually his dissertation. And so this was sort of his first stab at this, but it was a meaningful effort because he put a lot of work into it. And he started answering me and he looked at me and said, "Are you Mike Heiser?" You know, I did not expect that at all because, like, I'm the only biblical guy in the room, you know? Like, why would anybody in this room know me? And again, the paper didn't – I don't think he's read Unseen Realms, so I don't know what the context was. But he like I said, he just looked at me like and stopped in mid-sentence and said, "Are you Mike Heiser?" I said, "Yeah, that's me." And then he said something nice, you know, maybe he heard me do something maybe he heard the podcast. I don't know, but it was kind of a nice exchange because I let him know that, you know, I think there's some problems, you know, in the paper, but I'm just really glad to see somebody in your little wing, you know, your little neck of the woods here trying to think about this because I honestly haven't come across anybody. So what was interesting, though, is after it was over, there were three people in the room who followed me out who were evangelical Christians who were like in grad school for philosophy, and all three of them had read Unseen Realm. And so they're like, yeah, we know there's problems with this paper, but we just wanted you to know we've read Unseen Realm, and we're going to try to take the material and do something with it that would satisfy professional philosophers, like a philosophical defense of what, you know, I'm arguing for in Unseen Realm, and then, you know, use it for the church, you know. So like, I had no idea going in this room that, you know, what we do would be on the radar at all to people who really don't, you know, specifically do biblical studies. So that was kind of, you know, it was kind of amazing, actually, but it was really encouraging too, that you have people in that community who see the value of Unseen Realm and actually want to do something with it in that way.
Well, is there much content that is outside the biblical area for them to even get content? It seems like that would be one of the only places to go to get some of this content.
Yeah, that's fair. There really isn't, because if you don't have your head in biblical studies, and specifically, again, trying to work with the biblical text in its ancient context, like we do in Unseen Realm, you're really not going to encounter much of anything. In other words, you're not going to have a whole lot of data to work with. So you are, you know, what philosophical theologians are doing is they're looking at Christian thinkers, you know, Augustine, Aquinas, you know, more modern apologists, you know, Bill Craig, you know, some of these other people, and they're trying to answer questions, you know, like, if there are spiritual beings out there, can they act on the physical world or not? You know, like, because they're trying to define what a spiritual being is philosophically, because you get into all these sort of, you know, not exegetical questions, but theological questions. And that's a whole other area of discussion to try to have some sort of philosophical or logical or intellectual discussion or justification for, you know, what the Bible says or doesn't say. You know, if listeners would think about like the discussion of like arguments for the proof of God, okay, those aren't really biblical discussions, biblical arguments. They're philosophical arguments. Things like, well, every effect must have a cause. Again, that's a logical argument for the defense of God. Or things like C.S. Lewis's moral argument. You know, there's no basis to morality if there's not genuinely good and evil, and there wouldn't be genuinely good and evil if there was not a higher being, you know, a higher being that sets the standard for good and evil. So that's what philosophical theologians do. They ask these kind of questions and then try to, you know, noodle them, you know, try to deal with them. And so when they traverse into the supernatural world, they're not looking at the biblical text per se. They're just asking these sorts of questions and trying to think about them. But here, you have three people that are trying to, I mean, what their graduate work is going to be is to use the data of Unseen Realm to better inform those kinds of questions and discussions, which I just didn't expect going into the room. I went into the room more or less as a curiosity, but it was really a nice surprise. Even if I thought the paper, you know, had some serious problems, it was just nice to see somebody trying to do something with it and systematize it in some way.
It's going to be even more interesting for those three other students who are actually read Unseen Realm to incorporate your content into
the books.
Because, like you said that guy didn't read Unseen Realm, right? For that paper, that
it didn't seem like he did.
So to see maybe the next wave of papers come across with your content incorporated, I bet will be pretty fascinating. So did you hopefully exchange contact information, keep up on them, or maybe?
Yeah, I did. I actually sent them the pre-publication PDF of the Demons book, just so that it would help them in their graduate work. Because they, you know, I don't want them to have to wait 4 months or 3 months, you know, for that material. So And they were real happy to get that.
Yeah. Can you do that for the rest of us out there, please?
No, I can't do that for everybody. That's like professor to graduate student pity, you know. I'll try to help you a little bit.
What about any other papers?
Oh, let me look at my list. I have my list here. I went to one. This was one that didn't quite, it wasn't really what I thought it would be. But I went to one called A Defense of the Corruption-Only View of Original Sin. Now, for those who know my view of Romans 5:12, that it doesn't teach inherited guilt. Rather, it teaches the inheritance of death or mortality, or as the way that this paper articulates it, corruption. So I was hoping it would be kind of a biblical defense of this, that I would get some more information other than the journal articles I have, and I have two dissertations, you know, on the subject. But it really wasn't. One of the accusations for people who hold the corruption only view is that is the doctrine of Pelagianism, and it's really not. It's kind of a really poor accusation to make, because Pelagius, you know, was talking about salvation apart from Jesus, or supposedly Pelagius was talking about this, that, you know, he rejected, you know, Augustine's view of inherited guilt. And so people presume that means Pelagius in some way believed that our works contribute to salvation. It's really kind of a dumb argument, and that's actually what the paper was about, sort of asking the question, well, it was asking two questions. Was Pelagius really condemned? Because everybody says Pelagius was condemned as a heretic in the 5th century. And his argument was he was never condemned by a universal council. He was only condemned by a regional council, which didn't speak for the whole church, which... I mean, I didn't know that, so that was good to hear. But it really was kind of a church history paper, really kind of pushing back and saying, you know, Pelagius gets a bad rap here, and it's not really fair to tar and feather those who believe in the corruption-only view with Pelagius, because we don't really know if the majority of the church disagree with Pelagius anyway, you know. So it was kind of interesting in that regard, but I was hoping that I was looking for something exegetical there and didn't get it. But still, it was useful. I also went to a paper, this one was today, that I didn't know going in where this guy was going to be, but the paper was on the date of the death of Herod. Okay, and this is an issue for... Yeah, listeners may know, many of them will know, that I think Jesus was born in 3 BC, September 11th, 3 BC. And that means that Herod, of course, has to die after the birth of Jesus. So Herod either died in 2 or 1 BC, whereas the dominant New Testament view has Herod dying in 4 BC and Jesus being born in 6 BC. So this guy, I mean, there are journal articles that have come out recently defending a later date of Herod at 2 or 1 BC that do a good job. And so I went to hear this guy and had no idea where he was going to land. And it was a really, really good defense of the later death date. But this is a sort of a systematic breakdown of why the consensus date for the death of Herod just can't work. And then an argument for a later date for Herod's death, which fits really nicely with the 3 BC birth of Jesus that you get through the astronomy of Revelation 12. And this guy didn't even talk about astronomy. He never brought up Revelation 12 at all. He was just critiquing the basis of the consensus view for the date of Herod's death and did a really nice job. So that's probably the best paper I've heard to date. It was really a nice surprise, to be honest.
I was just looking through the papers here. Did you go to the divine warfare imagery in the Ark narrative?
I did not, but my friend here, Greg Lyle, who lives in San Diego, Greg Lyle is the guy who started McLot. You know, I hooked up with him, but he went to that one and he thought it was really good. He said it actually, he was actually familiar with some of the content because of the podcast. You know, he sort of knew what they were talking about as far as some of the contextual stuff with Mesopotamia and siege warfare and whatnot. But he said that was a really good paper, but I didn't get to that one. I was going to say, I actually went to like three or four philosophical, you know, the Evangelical Philosophical Society papers. You know, so when I go to these things and I get a chance to go to papers, I kind of like to do a few things that are sort of outside the biblical orbit that I'm interested in. So I went to one about OBEs and NDEs, believe it or not. Yeah, this paper was titled Evaluating the Logic of Physicalism with Corroborated Veridical Perception in NDEs with OBEs, you know, near-death experience, out-of-body experience. Veridical just refers to something that can be seen or heard. So what the paper was critiquing physicalists' critiques of OBEs and NDEs. You say, what's a physicalist? A physicalist is essentially a materialist that believes that there is no soul. There is no existence beyond the body. And the what we think of the soul is really nothing more than the brain or something caused by brain function. So this guy was critiquing the physicalist response to NDE and OBE research and probing it for logical inconsistencies and points of incoherence. And that was actually a decent paper. Gary Habermas was in that session. He wasn't the speaker. Habermas is famous in evangelical circles, apologetic circles, for two things. His apologetics work on the resurrection and the historical Jesus, and then this area. He's one of the few evangelicals, you know, apologists, philosopher, theologians that spends any time investigating out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences. So during the Q&A, you know, he and the speaker got into a bit of an extended discussion, which was interesting, you know, and how Habermas sort of perceived not only the physicalist argument, but this guy's paper. So that was definitely worthwhile. I think he did show that there are some real logical inconsistencies with the way physicalists attack or try to rebut the idea of existence beyond the body or outside the body when it comes to OBEs and NDEs. So maybe people might be surprised that that kind of stuff gets discussed at these academic meetings, but every once in a while you'll have a paper like that, especially in the philosophical section. So I saw that in the program and wanted to make sure I got to that. So that was worthwhile.
Are there any papers coming up?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that because there's one that's really interesting here. Tomorrow, there's a session at SBL. Well, it's actually an AAR session, American Academy of Religion. And I'm just going to read the title of this, and everybody will know why I'm interested here. This is a two-hour session put on by the Christian Theological Research Fellowship. And it's essentially a panel that's going to critique somebody's book. And the book title is Powers, Principalities, and the Spirit. It's by a woman who is from Africa. She's African, but she taught at Duke for a while, and she taught at another Ivy League school for a year or two. I can't remember which one it was, but she does some kind of ministry now. But that's the title of her book. Here's the subtitle. Let me just give you the whole thing. Powers, Principalities, and the Spirit, subtitle is Biblical Realism in Africa and the West. Now, what I'm hoping for, and I have no idea what to expect here, I'm hoping that I'm going to go in there and you're going to have a bunch of scholars poo-poo the idea of the reality of a spiritual world because we just know better. We're scholars, you know, we're product of the Enlightenment in the West, you know, we're product of Western rationalism. And I'm hoping to see this African woman sit there and look at them and just say, what is wrong with you people? That's what I'm hoping to see, because it's like she lives in Africa. She knows what goes on over there. And so she has this book. And then again, the subtitle says it all, Biblical Realism in Africa and the West. So I'm hoping to see her challenge these people in their skepticism about the reality of a spiritual world. I know nothing about this woman. I'm hoping to talk to her afterwards again, if I get anything near what I'm hoping to see, and just kind of see what she's about and who she is. And that I think that's going to be real interesting. That could be a bit of a food fight. You know? So I'm kind of hoping it is, but you know, we'll find out tomorrow when we get there.
Are there any books that have come out?
I'll give you a couple titles, but before we do that, there's one other session that is on Sunday. Sunday's my last day. I'm coming home a little early this year. And this is a 2.5-hour session. Again, listen to the title. It's going to be Genesis 6, 1-4 in recent interpretation. So basically, you're going to have a panel discussion. It's four people. I don't know any of them personally, although Ron Hendel is one of them, and he's a person whose work I'm familiar with, but I know the moderator, and so they're going to sit down and talk about probably recent scholarship on the sons of God, Nephilim stuff, you know, in those verses. So I'm going as a curiosity, just to, you know, sort of answer for myself, okay, like, have I missed anything recent that I ought to know about? And if, regardless of what the answer to that question is, I want to hear them talk about some of the more recent research on it. I'm willing to bet that the Apkallu stuff is going to be part of that discussion. It'll be interesting to sort of just sit in there and listen to, you know, hear people think about, you know, what they think about, again, these recent trajectories. Because the Apkallu stuff that I referenced in Unseen Realm, that work's really only was done by Amar Anos in 2010. So it's not that far removed. And I'm just wondering, if, you know, what the response is going to be to that. As far as books, there are, you know, a couple of things. I mean, the one paper I mentioned about the apologetic value of Christian demonism, that guy's dissertation, it was published. It's available with Wiffenstock, so I'll probably check that out. I may get it, but there's some language stuff that's available. I'm just looking here to see if there's anything. I have an Amazon list here that I just created to keep track of things I'm going to be looking for. I want to get Carmen Imes, the academic book. And by the way, this is a good opportunity to bring this up. Carmen Imes' book for the layperson, you know, Bearing the Name, you know, the name theology in Sinai, that's now shipping. That's now out. So we want to make sure to support Carmen. And that, I mean, she did a great job, and that's a significant book. So I'm hoping people will go up, you know, to Amazon and get that. And we also had Gary Yates on a while back, and he had that book that was entitled Urban Legends of the Old Testament, 40 Misconceptions or Misinterpretations in the Old Testament. That is now shipping too. So I'll probably pick up a copy of that. The publisher sent me Carmen's, you know, shorter book, but I don't have yet the scholarly version. So I'll probably go and scarf one of those up. But other than that, I'm more or less just going to be kind of tracking on four or five specific tables. I always go to the same tables every year just to see what they have and what's on discount. Here's one more exception here. This is new, and I'm hoping they have it here that I can get it at a steep discount. The Sons of God in Genesis 6, 1-4. It is published by Brill, which is, a high-end academic publisher. So I'm hoping, I'll have to look at it if they have it, but I'm hoping that's sort of a survey of recent scholarship on Genesis 6. So that would be nice if that's what that turns out to be. But the subtitle is Analysis and History of Exegesis. So I'm that would be handy to have. So those are the things I'm specifically looking for. But otherwise, you know, I just kind of troll, you know, for stuff and see what they brought with them, what they're discounting.
Did you stop by Lagos to see your old peeps?
Yeah, I did. I probably have spent half an hour, 45 minutes over there just, you know, hanging out at the booth, you know, talking to, and this year the Lagos booth was right next to the Lexham booth, which is kind of nice. So I don't have to wander around. Everybody was all in the same place, but yeah, you know, it's nice to catch up. I mean, some of those people I haven't seen for, you know, 4 or 5 months. So it was fun to do that. And of course, a couple of them are in the Lagos Fantasy League, and I'm in first place, so in that league, I felt pretty good. Had to go over there and sort of rub it in a little bit, but I made sure to do that.
Well, have you seen or had lunch or dinner with anybody? Is there any updates with other scholars? Anybody have stopped you in the hallway saying, where's my interview? I thought we were going to interview, do something. Anybody missing us actually interviewing or?
Yeah, well, as I was checking into the hotel, the first guy I ran into, I even ran into him at baggage at the airport because I flew out of Dallas, was Daryl Bach. And so Daryl Bach is confirmed for the third Naked Bible Conference, August 15th in 2020. And trust me, he's looking forward to it. So we got a confirmation from Daryl. And I had a breakfast meeting with Mark Chevalis. Now, Mark is an Old Testament guy. Daryl, of course, is New Testament. Mark is Old Testament, but more accurately, he is an Assyriologist. He's a Mesopotamian cuneiform scholar who is a believer, and so he has a special interest in applying Mesopotamian studies to the Old Testament. So he, his wife and his kids follow the podcast. So we actually connected. He before the event, you know, we were emailing back and forth. I actually knew his wife 30 years ago when I was in seminary. I was in seminary for 2 years, and I worked in the seminary library with this woman who wound up marrying him. So it's kind of interesting, and you know, it's just there's a backstory there. But finally got to meet him. I mean, I've known of him for a number of years, but finally got to meet him. And, you know, when I asked him, you know, if he would be interested in speaking at the conference, he was really enthusiastic. And he said it would thrill his kids too. So we have him confirmed for the event as well. And I'm hoping in the next day or two to have some conversations with one or two people yet. So we're going to try to get the confirmations, you know, early so that we can be announcing it. But those are two for sure.
Yeah, we're way ahead of the curve there. So that's good. So again, it's going to be August 15th back in Dallas, Texas, same location, 2020, August 15th. So have you ran into any of our listeners out there that's stopping you and mad at us for not having a Q&A?
Well, there's only one that I've recognized from both. He's actually been to both Naked Bible conferences, and he lives in L.A. His name's Daniel, and I ran into him today at one of the Near East archaeology sessions, and he's like, you know, I'm having a great time, but I am bummed that there's no getting together. So he had to throw that in, but there have been a lot of people here. I'll bet it's actually happened far more often than not that I'll leave a room and start walking to the next thing, and someone will intercept me and just, you know, they'll recognize me and say, hey, you know, I read Unseen Realm. Thanks for Unseen Realm. And I listened to the podcast or both. So that is a lot more this year than has been in the past. So the growth of I shouldn't say the growth, but just the awareness of the podcast and, of course, the book, it's very evident that this is growing and having an impact. I met another faculty person, you know, who uses the book in class. So I probably had a dozen, you know, of these sort of, I'm just walking along and somebody will, you know, come over and say hi and just thanks or whatever. Some of them have brought books too, you know, or they went out and I guess bought them and then ran into me. So I got to sign a few books, but there's so many people here. I don't think that was planned on their part. I mean, there's a couple thousand people here, but it's just nice, you know, to see that the awareness about what it is, you know, we're doing and trying to do is really, you know, it's really gaining traction. So it's nice to see.
When we start seeing Naked Bible t-shirts at the conferences, that'll be a telltale sign that,
yeah, that we would have to take a picture of for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Dan, that you spoke of, he graciously, I just want to say thank you on air to Dan, because he's the one that people who go to the conferences, he has these, everybody signs these pictures of the speakers autographed and everybody signs them and he frames them for us. And it's such a nice gift that we appreciate it. So,
yeah, it is.
All right, Mike. Well, is there anything else you want to leave us with or give us an update on before we leave? This is going to be a short one.
But I mean, that about covers it. So, you know, again, hopefully I'll be able to come away with a third confirmation. And I mean, that alone would be a good, successful trip.
All right. That sounds good. Well, next week we're going to be doing our 300th episode or Q&A episode. And I'm sure we'll reminisce a little bit. But we appreciate you taking the time to update us. And maybe next year in Boston, when the conferences go back there, we'll do interviews and cover it again.
I don't think we'll have a home sale get in the way next year.
It's getting close. Getting ready for that long drive.
It is.
All right. Well,
yep.
With that, Mike, I just want to thank everybody for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. God bless.
Thanks for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, visit www.nakedbibleblog.com. To learn more about Dr. Heiser's other websites and blogs, go to www.drmsh.com.